Those of us who regularly look at the news might have been shocked recently by seeing that a company called BrainBridge are seriously planning and working towards conducting head transplants. I'll say that again, head transplants. So that sounds pretty freaky. There's Frankenstein, there's some weird story, but this sounds like something real coming up. Is it possible? It's just some kind of imagination. Well, there was a time when heart transplants were an imagination. But in 1967, the first one was successfully performed. I remember it was a huge thing in the newspapers. I used to deliver newspapers and all over the front pages for quite a few days. Heart transplant. Nowadays, heart transplant just goes on routinely, but at that time, it was big news all over the world. And nowadays, not only heart transplants, other major organs also, liver transplants, kidney transplants, lung transplants, pancreas, thymus, stomach, intestines, and tissues from the cornea of the eye, tissues from the bones, from tendons, part of the skin, part of the pancreas, heart valves, nerves, veins, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's really getting Frankenstein-y, isn't it? All kinds of things get transplanted from one body to another. Cells from the bone marrow, stem cells move from one body to another. Burns, in, say on the face, then skin can be taken from the backside to replace skin on the face. That's kind of cosmetic surgery. We're moving parts of the body around here, there, and everywhere. The bionic person. What about this? Xenotransplants. That means transplants of organs from one body to another. Transplants of hearts from pigs and cows or bulls. It's said that the heart of a cow is better than the heart of a pig. It's going on. It happens. It started in 1984. A child with a congenital heart problem was given the heart of a baboon. The child died 3 weeks after the operation, but she survived for 3 weeks with a baboon heart. In the meantime, or since then, genetically modified pig hearts, pig's kidneys, different parts of other animals' bodies are being inserted into humans' bodies. And often there's a lot of problem in the body, the human body, accepting even parts from another human body, what to speak of from animal bodies. But the medical technology is going on, research, and all different hormones are pumped into the bodies of people who receive organ transplants, and there's increasing success in getting people to live with parts of other living beings' bodies. There's a company called eGenesis that researches and is growing human organs in genetically modified pig embryos. The embryos have some of the pig DNA replaced with human DNA. Pigs, why pigs? You think maybe gorillas, baboons, orangutans, chimpanzees, but although pigs are not primates, they have a similar structure and metabolism to humans, so we're told. What do I know about all these things? So xenotransplants could be the answer to organ shortage, but the technology for this is only at the experimental stage. Organ shortage means you have to take organs from a recently dead body to if you're going to go human to human, then you need to, if you're going to transplant, for instance, a heart from one human to another, you have to have the heart of a healthy human who died very recently, and it has to be the same blood group, and there are so many conditions that apply. Same thing with kidneys, and you can take out one kidney and still the body can function, but what is going on is that people, so there's a market for this, so some people get killed for the sake of their organs, or people who are very poor, they may give one kidney, which isn't very satisfactory for their own health, but to get some money, they may give it. So there are so many ethical considerations also. So there is a shortage, because there are more people who want new hearts than there are hearts in supply from... it'll be usually young people who die in accidents. You don't take a heart from a very old person who died, or from a very sick person who died. A young, healthy heart is best. Head transplants? Are they going to be possible? Well, a long, long way, it seems. Because to sever the spinal cord and reattach it, even within the native owner's body, is not within the present, well, I guess you could say it's within the imagination of medical researchers, but not much further than the imagination. But AI, artificial intelligence, that's the hope, that with AI-driven technology and research, then all the different obstacles can be got around, and it's considered, there's a company behind it considering it as a potential reality. And guess why there's so much interest in all of this? It's not simply altruism, but money could be a good business. Only the wealthy will be able to afford this. People with more money than good sense, you could say. Head transplants, yeah, why not? There are cases found in the ancient Vedic literature, ancient Sanskrit texts, not exactly according to medical procedures as they are now known, but medical or complex medical procedures in the ancient Vedic science were done not simply by physical means, but also by means of mantra, which means invoking subtle energies within the universe, of which people nowadays in the so-called scientific era are unaware of. One reason why this mantra technology is not prominent in the world today is because to utilize mantras, it requires a high degree of sadhana or spiritual practice, which is rare in the present day. In the Vedic literature, it's described that there was a great rishi or spiritually advanced person called Dadhichi, and he had advanced knowledge of how to perform materialistic activities, what are called pious activities, in order to get good results in a future life. In other words, how to generate good karma. And he had highly developed spiritual knowledge also. So what happened is that two exalted beings, semi-exalted beings, you could say, Ashwini Kumaras, they were two brothers who they are the physicians of the devatas, or the beings in the higher planets. But as physicians, they're considered not suitable for acquiring advanced Vedic knowledge. They have their particular place. They have their particular role to play. But the Ashwini Kumaras once approached Dadichi and begged him to instruct them in spiritual knowledge, Brahma Vidya. Dadichi replied that, "I am now presently engaged in arranging yajnas or sacrifices which generate, that's for fruitive activities, for generating pious results, for getting good karma. There are procedures to be followed." So Dadichi told them to come back sometime later. What happened in the meantime is that Indra, the king of the demigods, approached Dadichi and said that you can't give spiritual knowledge to the Ashwini Kumaras. That's wrong. They're only physicians. They're not suitable for acquiring spiritual knowledge. If you dare to give them spiritual knowledge from the Vedas, despite my warning, I will cut off your head. So, Indra returned to heaven, and after some time, the Ashwini Kumaras, who had come to hear of what Indra had planned for Dadichi, if he dared to give spiritual knowledge to the Ashwini Kumaras. And when Dadichi discussed this with the Ashwini Kumaras, they said to him, "Okay, here's what we'll do. We'll cut off your head and replace it with the head of a horse. You give us spiritual knowledge, you speak spiritual knowledge to us through the horse's head." So Indra, he says, if you give us spiritual knowledge, he'll cut off your head. So, okay, he'll come and cut off your head, and we'll give you back your original head. So Dadichi thought, well, I promised to give them spiritual knowledge, so he did. They gave him a horse's head, Indra cut it off, and Dadichi got back his original head. Another example is that of Daksha, who is a great ruler of the universe. And it's a long story, but anyway, his head was severed from his body, which wasn't very good news for the universe because he had an important role to play in it. He got involved in a big fight of his own fault, but still he needed to be alive for the benefit of the universe. So it was arranged that Daksha, who had lost his head, he was given the head of a goat. And Daksha lived for the rest of that life with a goat's head and was able to continue functioning normally, despite the apparent handicap. In his purport to his monumental translation of the primary Vedic text, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada commented on this incident, which is described there. He wrote, "It appears from the exchange of Daksha's head that the theory that the brain substance is the cause of all intelligent work is not valid. The brain substance of Daksha and that of a goat are different, but Daksha still acted like himself, even though his head was replaced by that of a goat. The conclusion is that it is the particular consciousness of an individual soul which acts. The brain substance is only an instrument which has nothing to do with real intelligence. The real intelligence, mind, and consciousness are part of the particular soul. After Daksha's head was replaced by the goat's head, he was as intelligent as he had previously been. He prayed very nicely to satisfy Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, which is not possible for a goat to do. Therefore, it is definitely concluded that the brain substance is not the center of intelligence. It is the consciousness of a particular soul that works intelligently." Now, these accounts, apart from highlighting that in previous times, Vedic mystical knowledge was highly developed. Of course, people nowadays won't believe such things. They'll believe that you can get a head transplant by modern science, but they won't believe that it was possible in previous times. But the Vedic literature describes that in previous ages, this medical technology was far more effective than and efficient than today. Not only were they able to transplant heads, but there are instances of persons even being revived from the dead. It's famously said that Lord Jesus, he revived Lazarus from the dead, but there's a whole process of doing that in the Vedic knowledge. And very old, worn-out bodies being rejuvenated. The Vedic literature tells us of sex changes, not by operation, but by mantra, and so effectively that a female transformed to a male could inseminate his wife, giving rise to pregnancy, and a male transformed to a female could give birth to children. So these accounts of Dadichi and Daksha both raise the question of where the memory, personality, and intelligence of an individual being reside. The three aspects of consciousness, memory, personality, intelligence, of course, it could be analyzed in different ways, but they're specific to individual persons. Dadichi instructed his students through the head of a horse. He retained his identity as Dadichi and his ability to share his spiritual wisdom. His previous consciousness with its associated personality, memory, intelligence was still intact. Similarly, Daksha continued as a governor of the universe despite having the head of a goat on his human body. He was still, for all intents and purposes, the same Daksha as he had always been. As pointed out in the commentary by Srila Prabhupada, the brain within the skull of a human being is not the seat of consciousness. More recently, going back to approximately the 9th century in the Common Era or the era after Christ, the tremendously powerful and influential philosopher Shankara, known Adi Shankara, known as Shankaracharya, within India, he at one point left his body by his yogic power. Shankara, for some purpose of his own, entered the body of a king who had just died, and the wives of the king and the ministers were delighted that their king, who was dead, was suddenly come back to life again, but they soon noticed that he's a different personality. He's much more wise, much more self-controlled, and he's a different person altogether. So that the brain is not the seat of the consciousness is a highly contentious point, because neuropsychologists nowadays, they mostly want to establish that consciousness is a function of the brain. That the brain in and of itself is not the seat of consciousness, but rather it's something like, a rough analogy can be given, it's something like the hardware, and the consciousness is like the software. But this point that it's not the brain itself which is the locus of the personality is substantiated to some degree by numerous reports of personality changes after organ transplants. So if you're going to get the heart of someone else or the lungs of someone else, you might end up being a somewhat different person. An article in the highly respected magazine in the psychology profession, Psychology Today, 28th of February 2024, discusses the case of a 45-year-old woman, Claire Sylvia, who received the heart and lungs of an 18-year-old male, youth, human. 3 days after the operation, she was asked what she would like to do. Now you're okay, now you're getting a little healthy and strong. What do you want to do? She said, I want to drink beer, which shocked her as much as everyone else who knew her, because she never liked beer previously, and she went on to discover that she'd got this urge to eat green peppers and chicken nuggets, which she never used to like before. And she dreamed of a person called Tim who would be with her forever. She had no idea who this was. When she met the parents of the deceased 18-year-old donor of her new heart and lungs, they found out that their son, whose name was Tim, had been very fond of chicken nuggets and green peppers and beer. Another case was that of a 5-year-old boy who received the heart of a 3-year-old boy. The 5-year-old, not knowing the identity of the donor, said that he called the donor of his new heart Tom. And he said he felt younger and he liked Power Ranger toys, one kind of brand of toys, Power Ranger toys. Later it was found out that the donor was called Tom. He had died falling out of a window trying to reach his Power Ranger toy. A research neuropsychologist called Paul Pearsall published a paper with many such anecdotes of recipients of transplanted organs having memories or personality traits belonging to the previous owners of their donated organs. And within the scientific community, there's speculation about how the memories of the deceased donor can persist within the recipient's bodies. But Vedic science gives good explanations that the soul is different from the body. But when the soul enters a particular body, it becomes attached to that body and identifies with that body. So when someone dies, especially when they die prematurely at a young age, in an accident or whatever, what happens is that the organ donors or the body that has died, they cling on psychologically. They cling on to thinking that that body is me. Even though they're not the body, they want to remain, and when they see that part of the body is going to remain alive, it's like a spirit. The spirit remains outside the body but remains attached to the body and can enter the body of someone who receives part of their old body. Bhagavad Gita states how the body is different from the soul. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So the usual continuum is that the soul, under the direction of higher powers, according to his karma, enters the semen of a male, maybe a human male or whatever, and is injected into the womb, or into the uterus, vagina, whatever, of a woman. And under certain circumstances, the semen catches up with the ovum, and then it develops, and then it goes, forms the embryo, there's birth, there's babyhood, childhood, youth, old age, and then it passes into another body. But sometimes if there is premature death, then the soul again remains attached to that body and doesn't leave it. The subtle body, or what's sometimes called a ghost or a spiritual form, disembodied consciousness, he or she remains attached to that body. So what's going on here? This is quite possible according to the Vedic understanding. The soul transfers along with the subtle body from the prematurely deceased body, along with the organ, into the recipient's body, and there becomes dual consciousness within the same body. What happens is also described in Bhagavad Gita. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. In other words, the consciousness, which is the very symptom of the soul, when one body dies, the soul leaves and the consciousness goes or is carried into another body. But if the organs of one body are put from the old body to a new body, then that consciousness goes from one body into another and may mix with the consciousness of the recipient body. Mix, not exactly mix, it may be there's influence like that. There may be more than one soul in a body, which also happens with malefic spirits. We say someone is haunted by a ghost. This explanation is highly unlikely to be acceptable to propounders of materialistic science, but it is in line with the Vedic knowledge, which describes that consciousness is never destroyed. It persists after the death of the body. In fact, the very fact of the life of a body means that consciousness is present. Living body is something of an oxymoron, because the physical body is only chemicals which have no life. It's the presence of the soul that gives consciousness, which gives life. That's how reincarnation happens. This is all described in Bhagavad Gita and in more depth in Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, it's described that there are different levels of material energy. There are gross material elements and subtle material elements. Mind, intelligence, and false ego are subtle material elements. And there's also the spiritual element, the spirit soul, which means life. Wherever we see life, there's this spiritual energy, which is different to the material energy. For all their science, they don't understand this at all. So, someone may be coming up soon, you never know. Someone may pay to get a head transplant in the hope of being able to enjoy a new, younger, better-looking, healthy body. But since the brain in the head is not the source of the individual sense of consciousness, the conscious self, the sense of identity, this body is mine, things may not turn out as expected. To undergo a head transplant, the patient would have to have his head reattached to a young, healthy body. And the young body, despite being no longer workable with the brain that it previously had, is likely to be still inhabited by the soul or the consciousness who previously energized it. So it may be that there, again, two souls within one body. The new body onto which the head is to be transplanted may well remain dominated by the previous owner. So it's not clear, if you get a head transplant, whether you'll be able to transplant all your sense of I am to the new body, how you identify yourself. Ultimately, it should be understood that the soul is aloof from the body, being eternal, whereas the body is temporary. Again from Bhagavad Gita, those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. That which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy the imperishable soul. So although within science it's accepted as a fact that the brain is the source of consciousness, it's a misconception, very strongly held. The materialistic or physicalistic science ones too deny the reality or even the possibility of the reality of anything beyond matter, beyond that which they can study by their instruments. However, making this endeavor to move the brain from one body to another may inadvertently result in this misconception being exposed. And another consideration is that all this endeavor to perpetuate the body, I have to have a heart transplant, I have to have a kidney transplant, liver transplant, bone marrow transplant, head transplant. The whole idea is that my existence depends on this body, which is a mistake. The idea that I've got this body, I have to keep it living as long as possible because after that I'll be finished. We think we're this body and we become so attached to it, thinking this body is me. But it's not me. If you get the kidney of a pig, then how is the body you? Did you suddenly become partly pig? Well, maybe you did. Maybe you're already like a pig by your consciousness anyway. But the Vedic knowledge, which is so much advanced knowledge in various fields of science that people didn't have, so much advanced in so many subtle sciences that people nowadays don't have, the Vedic knowledge teaches us to not be attached to these bodies, to understand that we are not the body. We are eternal living beings. We're not meant to remain in any material body. One after another, we get material bodies, but we should transfer our consciousness to the spiritual world, to get a spiritual body. As long as we have material bodies, we have to suffer failed kidneys, failed hearts, death in spiritual existence, which we're meant for. There's no birth, death, old age, or disease. The intelligence that we have in human life is meant for understanding that and acting in such a way to purify our consciousness so that we don't have to get born again and again and again, being so attached to this body that we try to make it live on and on and on and on by any means. I have to enjoy through this body. It's all a mistake. We get one body after another. So instead of trying to perpetuate life on and on and on, we should accept that, well, by the laws of the universe, the laws of karma, the laws of God which regulate the universe, okay, my time is up, time for me to go. Now that doesn't mean that one should not take measures to protect the body, to try to keep it healthy, but we should know that the purpose of human life especially is not simply to go on living and living and living, trying to enjoy through this body, but to understand that I am eternal and to get free from the cycle of birth and death, to transplant the consciousness from going from one body to another body. You want to get a pig's kidneys, but you could end up with a pig's kidneys by getting a pig's body if we act like a pig, just interested in food and sex and nothing much else. All these points should be understood. So instead of trying to drag on life one way or the other, yeah, take common sense measures, take medicine if we're sick, take treatment if we're sick, but so much attachment to the body that I have to keep on living one way or the other. Just when it's time to go, go. And utilize the time we have. Not wasted in trying to live like a pig. Hare Krishna.